This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Everyone, you are listening to Skip Intro, and today is actually our second installment of Watch Now, brought to you by Astro. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, Bahi Yusuf, as well as Ian McNally, and we are talking about this.
I know death. He's got many faces. I look forward to seeing this one.
Right, so unless you've been in a tunnel somewhere deep in the world with no Wi-Fi, you will have heard something of Dragons, something of King of the North, something or other. And it is all coming back on April, when is it?
April 15th.
On April 15th. And so we thought it would be as good a time as any to look back on the seasons that have been, because we are headed towards the final season. It's going to be a big one. Kick it off.
So I remember watching the first episode. I think it came out around the same time as The Walking Dead, I think. If I recall correctly, it was like watching this, like, well, there's this new show I should watch, I should check it out. And thinking back now, I mean, there's plenty of huge battles, epic dragons, all that kind of stuff. I mean, if you look at any top 10 list of most shocking moments, you'll come up with the best ones that most people talk about. But watching that first episode, one thing that was stuck in my head when I was just thinking about this was the very opening of the show introduces these mythical White Walker monsters, and then you run into these deserters that Ned Stark, your hero character, has to take care of. Mm. And it very straight away sets up the tone for this series. You know, I think he mentions as well, I can't remember the line that he says, but like, when you're the Lord, you got to do the dirty work yourself. Mm. I think he's telling John, or he's telling the other Stark boys about it. And it was just like, this is not your COD fantasy rubbish that you're getting here. Like, it really set that tone for me, and it was seasons, I think, before we saw anything more with the White Walkers again.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't see anything. I mean, for book people, I'm sure, like, Lynn, you've read the books, right?
I have read the books.
So you had an idea they were all coming back around, whereas, like, a lot of, I just forgot about those, that first episode by the end of the season.
And in some ways, looking back on it, the first season does that very well. It really does set the tone for the entire series, right? In that there will be unexpected twists and turns, there will be deaths that are uncalled for, there will be deaths that are, you know, justified, and there will be White Walkers.
While we're talking about the first season, the one thing that it did incredibly well and that really set the tone, I think, for everything that was to come was it established characters really, really well. Mm. And it placed characters very firmly within contexts where you would understand who they are within society and who they are to different people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you know, Game of Thrones, it's like, it's very complex, right? The web of characters that exist, the intermarriages, the rejections, you know, just...
And the weird names.
Exactly. And
different
all the things...
kingdoms.
And all the things that actually come before the first season, all the old gripes and like...
And how that's important.
Exactly. Yeah. So the first... I'm just thinking of how Tyrion Lannister was introduced and how that set him up immediately as... This is somebody that you need to reckon with, but this is somebody who's also very underestimated. And it also very rapidly establishes who among his siblings likes him, how he is in his family, his position in court. And so I think that those kinds of ground laying make the actual, like what you were saying, Bahe, the twists and turns and the sudden like... this is that kind of show. Yeah. It makes that mean much more.
Yeah.
Mm. Everything has to be grounded in character.
Yeah, and I think they spent a lot of that time in the first season doing that very well, right? If you only just sort of think back and look at the previous couple of seasons, you know, you're thinking about dragons, you're thinking about these big battle sequences, you're thinking about these big fights.
None of which were on the cards when it started for us,
for
TV viewers. We thought this could just be like, you know, the happy adventures of the family in Winterfell for six seasons.
Well, I don't know about happy.
Yeah.
But
well,
no, you're right.
We were young and innocent 8 years
absolutely
ago.
Absolutely, innocent days, right? It was that idea that in the first season you... I don't know, I guess spoilery maybe, when Daenerys gets her dragon eggs.
Yeah.
It's this idea that, dragon eggs. Oh, well, so silly.
It's a total throwaway thing.
Silly
like
girl.
They're like a geological kind of curiosity. Yeah, they're
absolutely.
Not even, as far, I can remember, I can see the scene. It shows that like the set design and everything just burns in your brain. But they're literally just like, oh, and here's some dragon eggs. Like, really? What? Okay. And they're put aside.
Yeah, but nobody else but her believes that they're dragon eggs,
yes.
Right? And then one of my favorite moments is when it comes true and you go like, holy crap.
Actually, that was a beautifully done moment.
Great moment.
Yeah, and also because it arose out of a moment of such great grief, right?
Yes.
So, and of
she
course,
throws herself on the well, she throws herself on the fire and not expecting anything to happen, right?
That's the thing. And like, that's the thing about Game of Thrones, right? We can't, it's hard to talk about without spoiling things, but at the same time, the emotional impact of it, I think everybody knows someone who's been traumatized by Game of Thrones. They get that faraway look in their eyes and then they just, you know, but like, I, for me, a lot of the key things that are leaping out are actually not moments that I read and then saw, right? Because my smugness has long dissipated. Okay. It's over now. You know, the TV shows have moved so far past the books that there's nothing we can hold over you people anymore. You know, there's nothing that we just know that you don't.
You people.
Just to be sort of like the guy who's never paying attention in class, which point does the book and the series sort of pass each other?
Last season.
It's when something very big happens to Jon Snow when he tries to let the wildlings pass the wall.
Yeah.
Do you remember that moment?
Yeah.
That's the moment that I don't know actually in the books what happens to Jon Snow after that. So it's gone so far. Oh,
because
wow.
they split, right? Because they start, like, one of the books splits the characters at one point, like 4 or 5 or something like that, right?
All the books are based on only character point of view. So every chapter is written from the point of view of a character.
Oh,
so even though the books are so meaty, you know, you might be, I don't know, 700 pages away from the last Sansa appearance. Actually, Sansa's a bad example because she shows up.
Right.
And so you're kind of waiting also for the first time. And then all of a sudden, you turn a page and there's the character perspective of someone you never saw before. So there's that kind of thing. The shows kind of keep you up to pace with everybody else much better. The books, it's like, there's a great distance.
I'd have trouble getting through that. I've just got terrible, just like memory and focus and like, just, you know, I'm like a cat. I see a thing go by and I'm just lost.
Chasing it.
Well, I'm gone.
What are you talking about?
I won't be able to keep track of the books. Like, sorry, were you just trying to build up on my joke and I just fell that? Okay, cool.
But yeah, so for me, a lot of the things that were quite stunning to me are things that have happened after, things that I didn't know were going to happen. Like, one that sticks in my mind is the Battle of the Bastards. Simply because, is that really on a TV show? Like, is that battle scene not in a movie?
Yeah.
And, you know, and also because they've built one side of that battle up in such a, you know, kind of big bad kind of way. He's been built up so you hate him so badly.
He's so cartoonishly evil without being cartoonishly evil.
But hang on. Isn't there a moment that just before that battle starts that something happens and just sort of truly wrenches your hearts? Or is it just me?
No.
I can't remember.
I do remember. And yes, it's terrible. So, but that's the nature of Game of
Thrones. No, completely. Yeah.
So maybe
everybody's talking about the Battle of the Bastards. I'm like, hang on. There's a split second before that just, you know, before.
Oh, the Zig don't zag.
The Zig don't zag. Yeah. Is that thing?
I forgot about that guy already. There's too many characters. There's only so much room in my heart for Game of Thrones characters.
I think that's why I like Battle of the Bastards so much, because it's catharsis.
And
because
it's a moment. Justified. That battle is justified.
There's I wanted to go rewatch that episode just to kind of refresh my memory, but all I just looked at on the internet was GIFs of Jon Snow picking up his sword with the horses riding at
him.
I mean, that captures that moment perfectly.
Yeah, great shot. Yeah.
We're talking about our favorite moments of the 7 seasons of Game of Thrones that have passed. This is, of course, Watch Now, brought to you by Astro. And you know what? If you have somehow managed to miss all of it, or if you're not completely up to date and you want to get there before the new season comes out, you can stream season 1-7 on demand, and it is uncensored, in case you were worried. You can connect your Astro PVR to Wi-Fi. You can download the Astro Go app, and all information will be available on watchod.com. And, you know, we'll be talking about this again. Up next, more of our favorite moments. Keep it here at BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. You are listening to Skip Intro, and today it's our second installment of Watch Now, brought to you by Astro. The focus today is on Game of Thrones, because it is coming out so soon, you guys. So we're talking about our favorite moments from the seasons that have been. We've established kind of that season 1 was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about one big battle scene. What else have you got?
I think for me, like, the show keeps introducing things. We talked about the dragons earlier. It keeps introducing things that you don't expect to be in the show, because it's very much grimy reality, medieval times kind of thing to start with.
But dragons.
And then it goes on, it's like, but people rising from the dead. And then it goes on further, and then, but time travel.
And then you've got people dying on toilets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, that's kind of part of the medieval times bit, really,
yeah,
isn't
that's
it?
The thing.
A lot of people died on toilets back in the day.
Also died in toilets killed by their own sons.
Yeah.
Ooh. We're treading
close. Just adds a little layer.
But the introduction of time travel just blew my mind, and they haven't come down yet on whether it's the you can affect the past, but it won't have an effect in your present because it will have always been that way.
Yeah.
Like, they have had a moment where somebody affects the past in their world.
And
it was like, what? And then they did it again. And it was, absolutely heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
And hey, it resulted in the loss of a character. Who knew that was going to happen with a plot point in Game of Thrones? But that's a thread that it's very tricky to pull on. And I'm wondering now, as we get into the final season, this is one of the things I'm wondering about for the new season, how they're going to address that, if at all. There's multiple theories out there for what that might mean and how certain characters might kind of tie into what's come before the show. I'm just talking in vague terms now, really, aren't I? But
and
it is.
I'm just glazing
over.
It
could be. I hope it's not the time straw that broke the time camel's back, because they've made a good job so far of turning this into a long-running TV series. The Walking Dead seems to have wandered off the path slightly with regards to quality and storylines and keeping everyone interested. I'm hoping they stick the landing on this, and I hope this isn't the thing that makes them, you know, flub it.
You know, I think that they're going to stick the landing on some, but not all.
Yeah.
That's I'm expecting that. Yeah, I'm not going to go in wishing that, like, you know, at the end of it, I go, that was right.
Yeah, you're right. I think also in some ways, season 8's got, what, limited number of episodes. And with all the characters that there are, I mean, I was rewatching the trailer this morning, and then I was just reading through a couple articles, and I was just like, yeah, there's so many main characters in this thing. One, not everybody's going to get, in shock, a happy ending, but at the same time, not all of them will have an ending that we will be happy with.
God, let's just hope for one happy ending at this point.
I don't know. I'm kind of happy if suddenly the world burns up and, you know, I'm just like, ah, that's cool. 7-8 years of my life down the toilet, but okay.
No, but that's one thing I wanted to address, right? It's not exactly a favorite moment, but okay, so we've had Red Wedding, Purple Wedding, we've had that Oberyn Martell versus the Mountain.
Yeah. Oh, God.
You know,
the watermelon moment.
Yes. Yeah, so we've had things like that. We've had characters holding the door. I'm just listing the things where after that I couldn't sleep. Like, I literally couldn't sleep. Really? I had to just switch off the television and sit with my thoughts.
Sit in silence.
Yeah, and then hated my thoughts because I could see it. You know, so it's just...
And then you can go reread it again for even more fun.
No, but why do we do it? I guess is what I'm getting at. Before season 8, which I am going to watch, by the way, but why do we do this? I mean, it's an interesting reference point, Walking Dead, because Walking Dead is really just torture porn.
Yeah,
there's nothing left to it, I feel.
Not now, but originally it was that core group of survivors and being invested in those characters. And like, you know, when somebody died, it was heart-wrenching. Now it's like, I expect 3 people to die every episode and I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
But with Game of Thrones, there's still that, I've had that hollow feeling so many times and I don't know why I'm still watching, but I'm so invested.
Like, I was trying to think back, like, they've introduced new characters and like, it's any series that tries to introduce new characters and make them beloved, it's very hard to do. And Oberyn Martell was one that just sung instantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brienne of Tarth was like not in the first 3 seasons, right? 2 seasons?
Something like
that. It's hard to tell. Like, there are only 10 episodes every season, but it feels so much longer because they kind of timestamp elements of your life at this point.
Also, for me, I've always joked that at the end of this entire thing, I'd like to, you know, get a box set and just sort of cut it up as an edit exercise.
The Topher Grace edit.
Sorry?
The Topher Grace edit.
Do a Topher Grace edit, right? So I can just go like, ooh, I'm wondering what Arya Stark's storyline is, and just sort of follow her through 8 seasons, not having to jump between all these other guys and keeping track in my mind where they are in the story, where they are in the map, where they're, who they're in relationships with and who they're angry with now. It's just, you need like a tomb to be... Yeah, just keep track of this.
The book is not for you.
I've established that a long time ago.
So what other favorite moments do we have in this landscape of wonder and misery that is Game of Thrones?
Well, you've talked about a lot of spectacle moments there with, you know, holding doors and battles and things like that. I couldn't help but think of a moment where there was at the Night's Watch, I think, when Stannis Baratheon's men turn up and they're having a discussion over who will lead the Night's Watch and everything like that. And Stannis Baratheon corrects the grammar of the guy who's leading the Night's Watch. He's just saying, like, it'll be, you need less than this or whatever. You'll have less men on the wall. And Stannis just goes, fewer. And he doesn't say it to anyone in particular. He's just saying it to himself. I think Sir Davos Seaworthy's beside him. And it's just like, I just thought that was a fun little moment for Stannis, who was such a misery guts for most of the show.
But that's a character thing again, right?
Yeah.
That's Game of Thrones does so well.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect little character moment for me. I just thought, it's like, he's just saying it out loud to nobody except himself. Like, I'm correcting your grammar.
I'm better than you.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, one of my absolute favorite moments, and I think we've all been on the internet since this seasons have come out, but very early on middle of second season, when Dany has her dragons taken away from her, and there's that moment where she screams, "Where are my dragons?" Every time I see that, I get this thing that she's not screaming about her pets, about her own, about things she's owned. She's screaming about her children.
Mm.
That look in her face of just
She's fear. Had a lot of traumatic experiences by that point.
You're right, but it's like, it's not fear. She screamed out of anger, like, my children have been taken from me. And I, for me, that's a very strong moment in my head every time I see that GIF. And it's like, it's not funny. This is a very strong moment as a mother.
But there's the great payoff to that when she says, Jacaris, right, later on. And she, like, torches that magician dude.
Yeah, that was great.
That was fantastic.
Worth it.
Okay, so we've been talking about our favorite moments that have gone past, but of course... Season 8, on its way. What are we hoping for? Is there any particular thing that you're looking forward to? And also just, who do you think is going to win the Game of Thrones?
Oh, simple question.
Just easy, you know, just one word answer. Come on, guys.
I mean, the happy ending story is Dany and Jon, but...
Is it?
Well, that's the stereotype. Ending? I know it's the incestuous one. It's as close as you get in that world. But I think, I can't remember, I wish I'd written down who it was. Someone said years ago that Game of Thrones is what happens after Happy Ever After. Like the you know, plucky guy with a hammer storms the castle, gets rid of the Mad King, marries the princess, and that should be the happy ending. But what actually happens is misery and lots of beer and dying in a boar hunt, and like the kingdom goes to hell and stuff like that. And that's an interesting take on it. George Martin doesn't want it to go to Happy Ever After either. The other slight worry I have about this is that they never really talk about the astrology of Game of Thrones. I'm not sure if it's covered in the books either, but it is similar to an old 1982 book by Brian Aldiss, who wrote Super Toys Last All Summer Long, which became the basis of AI by Steven Spielberg. There's a series of books called Heliconia. I've only read the first one, but it's essentially a world on a very elliptical orbit. So the winters last thousands of years, the summers last thousands of years, very similar. And during the winter time, these creatures called Fagors become their civilization rises, and they survive in harsh winters. During the summertime, human civilization flourishes, and it will go back and forth. So my slight worry is that, like, winter is coming. Winter is always coming, so that even if this works out, there is always the concept, even if there's no White Walkers left at the end of this, winter will come again in thousands of years. And will this, I don't want a Battlestar Galactica style, all of this has happened before, all of this has happened again, and we've no idea how we're going to end this series kind of ending.
Only thing I hope for is there's a satisfying ending. I'm not that invested in whether I want Jon or Dany or Tyrion to win, you know, or, you know, heaven forbid, Littlefinger.
Oh, I changed my answer. I want Tyrion, yeah.
Yeah. Or just like any one of these guys to just take the throne. But at the end of the day, I just want it to be a worthy win or a worthy ending. That's all.
I am actually quite firmly Team Sansa.
Oh. Yeah.
Because I think she's learned the most.
Cool.
If you're talking about a character who's had to kind of go through the grind, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
No, but also she's learned. She's actually learned from every situation she's been in, which is more than you can say for some of these dummies. So I'm pro Sansa with Tyrion as her hand.
Ooh. And then Arya behind it as her, like, her master of assassins.
Yes, as her
mistress of assassins.
I would watch that show.
That's a show.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a show.
They've talked about no sequels, but they're doing a prequel, right?
I don't know, you guys. I don't know how much more I have in the tank for Game of Thrones.
Let it end.
I love it, but it's taken so much.
Can I just throw something out there? What if they do like a Soprano style ending? Just a cut to black, and you just sit there for 10 minutes going, "What?"
Can you imagine the nerd rage?
Oh my god!
It would be so real.
I think HBO would actually be burnt down.
If you've missed any part of Game of Thrones, somehow, you can stream season 1-7 on demand. The content will be uncensored, so all the violence and sex that your little heart desires, you can connect your Astro PVR to Wi-Fi or download the Astro Go app to enjoy that. All information will be available on watchod.com. And let us know your favorite Game of Thrones moments, and you can scold us as well if we ruined anything for you. Unfortunately, we are on Skip Intro MY on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's been Skip Intro BFM 89.9.